If you're someone who's been told you weren't good enough, not big enough, not fast enough, not smart enough, or if you've ever felt paralyzed by a failure you just weren't willing to accept, this is the show for you. Hustle and Motivate is a blueprint built by guests who've overcome obstacles, silenced critics, and overcome adversity by seeing every failure as an opportunity, realizing the true power of the underdog mentality. This is Tyler O'Shea, and you're listening to Hustle and Motivate. Today's guest is an award-winning teacher, professional speaker, and three-time Amazon best-selling author. Joel Hallbaker has been undersized his whole life. At just 5'3", he fought an uphill battle to prove himself from youth sports through college athletics. And today, he's living his passion, teaching students of all ages about leadership and confident humility. Trust me when I say I wish I had him as a teacher back in high school. I hope this conversation helps you and that you learn as much as I did. Here is Joel Hallbaker.
So I have been I've been small on pretty much every team I've played on. I'm about 5'3", 5'3½" actually, if you ask my kids, because I'm pretty insistent about that extra half inch. And I was very blessed to have the opportunity to play three sports in high school and then play college soccer. And I played on a very good NAIA soccer team. They're now Division III at Covenant College. I was not one of the better players on the team, I'll be quick to add. But I was blessed to get to be on the team there. And then I also spent one semester studying at the University of Oxford in England and played for the New College First 11 soccer team, well, football team over there as well. And loved being able to do those things. But at each of those places, just like in high school, you know, I had to prove myself coming in, because when I walk on the field, I don't instantly cause people to respect me with my size or my speed. You know, there are some athletes, they just walk around and you look at them and you think, okay, well, that guy's going to be a player. That guy's going to be a baller. He's going to be good. Well, that's not what happens when I walk onto an athletic field. And the same thing happens as a coach. I've been a high school coach for over a decade. And when I coach guys' teams, I always have to make sure that I find the referee, because the referee will come over before the game and be looking for the coach, and they'll look right past me because I look like one of my players, because I'm small and because I'm young looking anyway. And so that's just been a part of my, you know, that's been a part of my journey ever since I was in middle school, is just having to overcome that kind of initial lack of respect or being overlooked. So it's become ingrained, and you know, it's become a part of who I am, and it's got some good and some bad to it, but it's definitely been a part of my journey for a long time.
And how did that kind of develop over time? Because initially, you know, you mentioned, you know, kind of a lack of confidence. How did you grow your confidence?
Well, and so some of it was just having success on the field. That is, you know, once you show people that you're a good player, they don't care how big you are. If you can do the job that needs to be done, they're not worried about what you look like. But the other part of it, and this is the even bigger part, was having people that believed in me. Because if I hadn't had people who believed in me, I wouldn't have had the success on the field that I did. And so that's a big part of it, is just being, you know, like I said, having someone that believes in you, being around people who want to encourage you, that kind of thing. And so now as a coach, it's something that I love to be able to do, which is to encourage players and believe in them when maybe other coaches hadn't, or maybe when some of their teammates hadn't, and try to encourage them to become better than even they realized they could. You know, a lot of coaches talk about seeing potential in players, even maybe even more potential than what the player knew they had. And I can definitely testify to that, because there are certain kids you see and they think, well, I'm okay, but you know, I've got kind of this ceiling or whatever. And a coach will come along and, you know, maybe it's changed something about their mechanics. Maybe it's just get them to believe in themselves. But it's really fun to see athletes go on to become better athletes and go on to become more successful athletes than they thought they could, just because somebody believes in them. And that was a big part of my journey as well, was having people to encourage me.
And when did you decide you wanted to become a teacher and a coach?
I knew I wanted to coach before I knew I wanted to teach, but it was during college. I originally went to college with a goal of going to law school and becoming an attorney. And about one semester into my history degree as an undergraduate, I realized that life as a lawyer is probably not as much fun as it seems like it would be according to John Grisham novels, which I grew up reading, you know? And so I thought, so what do I want to do? Well, I know I love the game of soccer, and I was falling in love with history because I had three brilliant history professors in college. And so I thought, well, that's a way that I can be around the game and continue this passion I have for history. So I decided instead of becoming a lawyer that I'd become a high school teacher and a soccer coach. And my original goal was to get my graduate degrees and to be a college professor and a college soccer coach. But God had other plans. Instead of graduate degrees, I had two kids. And, those are things that I am very thankful for, the changes that God brought about in my life, because, I love my kids. I wouldn't trade them for the world. And the longer I've been in high school coaching and teaching, the more I love this age kid, the more I enjoy working with this age kid. So, that's something that has been, it's something I've been very, very thankful for. And I'm excited to continue getting to do something I love. You know, I know a lot of people make a lot more money than I do, and a lot of people have a lot more high-profile jobs than I do, but I'll be honest, pretty much every morning I get up, I'm excited about going to school that day because I love what I do. I love teaching. I love coaching, and regardless of how much money I do or don't make, like getting to do something I love every day, that's something that I would gladly choose over a big paycheck, and I have for my whole adult life.
Amen. And we touched on this earlier, and I really liked your answer, so I want to go back to it if you don't
sure.
mind. You know, when they look back at having you as their teacher, what lessons do you want your students to remember?
Yeah, I want them to remember that life is bigger than a grade in a class. It's bigger than any one season you're going to have on an athletic field, especially as a high school or a college kid. I want them to know that the purpose of their education is to become a better person. The purpose is to become a person who lives with integrity and understands virtues like justice and temperance and prudence and fortitude and the importance of honesty and those kinds of things. I want them to know that when they leave my classroom, I'll still be here to support them. So if you need, you need to come and talk, come and talk. You need somebody to write you a letter of recommendation, shoot me an email. You need somewhere to find a hot meal when you're in college and you're tired of cafeteria food, call me and come have dinner with my wife and I and that kind of thing. Because I want kids to know that life is about relationships. It's not about success. One of the things that I tell my sports teams and one of the things that I wrote in my book is that as a leader in whatever area, business, sports, teaching, whatever, the goal shouldn't be to be successful. The goal should be to create good relationships, because if you do that, the success will come. What I tell people is if you take care of relationships, the results will take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So if I have a good relationship with my soccer team, I know they're going to work hard for me. If they work hard for me, I know we're going to win. Right. And so if I take care of the relationships, the results will take care of themselves. But if I just focus on winning, eventually that's going to cost me relationships, because my decision-making process will be different. And therefore, even though we might win soccer games, in order to do that, some of the decisions that I would have made would have hurt feelings or damaged relationships. And that's not worth it, because, I mentioned my high school girls team had a lot of success in the past few years. I'm very thankful for how well they've done. We won two state runner-up trophies, and that's pretty cool. But the reality is that almost every single kid on those teams has now graduated, and those trophies are sitting in a case somewhere in the high school collecting dust. And most of the kids there don't remember them. So what good are those trophies if, in order to win those trophies, I damaged a bunch of relationships? Mm-hmm. Right? It's just not worth it. The point is, I tell these girls all the time, you're going to be a person a lot longer than you're going to be a soccer player. And so I want to make sure that you know I care about you as a person, not just as someone who can help us win games. And I hope that kids remember that after they leave my soccer program or after they leave my my history classroom.
And I could tell just by the way you talk about this stuff is like you're in the perfect career for yourself. And, I would love to have you as a teacher, this type of attitude that you have. But how did you branch out? Before you were a three-time Amazon bestselling author, you said you got into speaking professionally.
I did, yeah.
Develop?
Well, it was just something that I was talking with my wife about one day because I've loved being in front of audiences, whether it's a high school classroom or a church group or a big convention, whatever it may be. Like, I love being in front of audiences. I love storytelling, and I love inspiring people and teaching people. And so we were kind of brainstorming one day about what I could do with some of my free time that would be both enjoyable but also economically beneficial. And so we came across a couple of different ideas involving professional speaking, went through a course by Grant Baldwin called the Booked and Paid to Speak, which is awesome, and really just started the journey of becoming a professional speaker because, I feel like it's something that I'm good at. I mean, I tell people all the time when I talk with them about it, like, if I can keep a classroom full of disinterested, jaded teenagers involved and interested, then how much more successful can I be with an audience that wants to be there? You know what I mean? Like, if an audience that pays to be there is way easier to talk to than a bunch of kids who just could care less about history when they first come into my classroom. And so I love doing that. And it's been a lot of fun to expand what I do. So my kind of areas of focus are education and leadership and blended family life, because those are three things that I have been living for years and years and years. And so to get to be in front of audiences and to try to inspire people in those areas, it's an extension of the classroom for me. It's a whole lot of fun. And I'm grateful to have been able to do that, like I said, in front of a lot of different audiences, churches, high schools, colleges, conferences, conventions, you know, small groups, giant groups, whatever. And it's always fun when I get to be on stage with a microphone, because my goal is to try to get the people in the audience to understand how they can become better versions of themselves. Not because I'm better than them, but because I know that every single person can improve. And if I can help you figure out how to become a little bit better than you were, well, that's a win, right? That's a victory right there. So that's always my goal, is just to inspire and encourage people.
So I'm curious to know how this transitioned into, you know, being an author as well. I know you wrote the shorter book, and then you wrote the full length book.
Correct.
I believe you're working on something else.
Yeah, that's,
I'm not sure that's correct.
That's right. I've got an ebook that I wrote a couple years ago about, it's called 10 Things Dad Taught Me Without Saying Anything. And it's leadership lessons I learned from my dad, who was a Vietnam War vet and a 20-year Army veteran. And then the full-length book I wrote is called Inverted Leadership, and it's about gospel-centered servant leadership. It's all about how Christ was the ultimate servant leader, and when we lead by putting other people's interests in front of ourselves, that leads to good relationships, which leads to better results anyway. And then I contributed to another book, which is a lot of fun. And then, so right now I'm working on another book about blended family life. Because again, I'm part of a blended family. I'm divorced and remarried. I've got two daughters from my first marriage. And I'm putting together a book about how we've done that, and hopefully how to encourage other people to do that well. Because the statistics these days about divorce rates and blended families and remarriage and those things, they're just going up in a lot of ways. And so the question is, how can I serve those groups to help them have a better functioning relationship? Because I've never met anybody who went through a divorce who just thought, man, that was a lot of fun. You know, instead, it's a lot of bitterness. It's a lot of hurt feelings. And unfortunately, a lot of times that has a negative effect on whatever kids are involved. And so my goal is to help the parents act more mature and more respectful toward each other, not for their own benefit, but for the benefit of their children. Because that's really what it's all about. Like, ultimately, both my ex-wife and I, we're adults. If we can't get along, that's not acceptable, because what we want to teach our children is you should be able to get along even if you don't like somebody. Even if you have a hard time with someone, we expect you to be able to do that. Well, guess what? If I can expect that out of my 15-year-old daughter, I better be able to do it myself at age 36. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I try to teach people as well, is just to the phrase that I use is kind of a revision of the famous quote by Mohandas Gandhi. He said, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And so what I encourage people is to be the type of adult you want your children to become.
That's awesome. And to many of us, you know, writing a full-length book seems like such a daunting task. Can you talk about, like, the early challenges you face when writing Inverted Leadership?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest challenge that I had was simply sitting down and making myself work on it, because I was, teaching full time. I was coaching a high school team. And at the time, for a while, I had also been, to earn extra money, I had been getting up early in the morning and teaching online English classes to Russian students. And there's like it's an 11 or 12 hour time difference between where I live and Moscow. And so the question was, when on earth am I going to find free time to write a book? Jeez. And so we sat down and looked at our schedule, and my wife and I realized my commute to school each day where I teach is 45 minutes each direction. So that meant I had an hour and a half each day where I'm just sitting in the car. And what I have done for the past few years prior to writing the book is I basically just listened to audiobooks and podcasts, because that was a great way to fill the time of driving. And so I realized if that's where I have an hour and a half every day, well, that's where I can do my writing. And so what I would do is I would sit down and I would outline an entire chapter or a section of a chapter and kind of write it out on a 3x5 card. And I would take an old school AA battery powered miniature cassette recorder, like you see newspaper reporters from 90s movies carrying around, right? And I would put that in my car, and I would click it on and put it in my lap, and I would drive down the road, and I would just speak whatever chapter I was working on that day. And then I would come home, and either my wife or I would transcribe it, and that became the rough draft of the book. And so, and then once you've got a rough draft, then it's just editing. And that takes a long time. Mm-hmm. But the hardest part for so many people is just staring at a blank screen. Now, you just see the cursor blinking at you, and it's like it's mocking you, right? So I say, okay, good. We'll turn the screen off and just go talk. Like, as a speaker, as a teacher, this is what I do. I know that I can speak things well. And so it was really a lot of fun to speak it and then go back and edit it into book form. And I found that that worked really, really well for me. So I got that idea from a guy named Chandler Bolt, who has something called bestseller publishing. So if people are looking to figure out how they can go about finishing their book, I recommend his program. I also recommend a guy who's got one called Bestseller Publishing. I think his name is Rob Kosberg. Those guys have excellent information on their websites, a lot of free information that's very helpful to anybody who's thinking about writing a book.
So obviously, from the things you mentioned, you're a very avid reader, which seems to be increasingly rare these days. So for the people out there who might have stopped reading after high school or college, or they say, I hate reading, can you try to explain why you think it's so important for people to continue reading and what it means to be a lifelong learner?
Yeah. So I could, you could ask my high school classes. That's a rant that I go on probably twice a week. Especially in the digital smartphone generation of kids who would rather look at a screen all day. And I don't say that – well, I do say that a little bit condescendingly, but not entirely condescendingly. Now, the thing is, my opinion is that in order to think well, you need to be able to read better than you could before. And so that means, like, when you're going through school, if you graduate high school and you're still reading at a freshman level, then you didn't put in the work that you needed to. Like, you can't blame the teachers for you not being able to read at your grade level. That's up to you, because we can't make you read other than in our classroom for 45 minutes or 90 minutes a day. You got 24 hours a day. And so if you want to read better, that needs to be on you. If you don't like to read, then I feel like someone owes you an apology. Because that means that they either never taught you how awesome it is, or they forced you to read things you so disliked that it spoiled your love of learning. And if that's the case, then teachers do owe you an apology. But either way, if you don't like to read, I would encourage people, go find an audiobook, go find a podcast that you love, because it's not quite the same, but it is a great place to start. It's a great place to get back into learning. I wrote a blog post a couple years ago called, I wrote it, and it's basically about it's called The Illusion of Enlightenment, The Danger of Thinking We Know More Than We Do. And it's basically, like the title implies, it's about how, especially today in the era of smartphones and Wikipedia, we all assume that we're experts at everything, or we can be experts in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the case. It's just not. It wasn't the case, before smartphones. It's not the case now that we have smartphones. And so the truth of the matter is, nobody knows everything they need to learn. And so we all have more that we can be learning every single day. And, the old adage that you hear all the time, like, you learn something new every day, that's 100% true. The question is, what are you learning and where are you getting it from? I heard someone say many years ago, there are lots of people who could get a PhD in their local newspaper. But what has reading that newspaper ever actually done for them other than allow them to have conversations around the water cooler at work? And it kind of made me stop and think, like, that's not a knock on newspapers, because at least those people are reading. But the truth of the matter is, if you spend 5 hours a day looking at a screen, you're learning something. The question is, what are you learning and what's the source of that knowledge? And so that's what I want to challenge people with when it comes to reading, is just be willing to broaden your horizons. Be willing to read things that you don't necessarily agree with. Be willing to read ideas that come from a very different worldview than your own, if nothing else, so that you can be better informed about why you disagree with those things. And so, again, I try to encourage my students. I definitely try to encourage my daughters to be lifelong learners, to be avid readers, because those are things that just, they help expand your brain. You know, science, all the scientific research points to, especially when kids are younger, the more they read, the better off they're going to be for life. Not just the earning potential, but just actual being able to learn and function. You know, it's not about necessarily having all A's, but I would, in general, if I'm hiring somebody and I've got two people and everything else is equal, but I've got one who tells me, yeah, I'm reading this book and this book and this book. And the other person says, yeah, I haven't cracked a book since high school because I haven't had to. You know, I'll be honest, I'm probably not going to hire you because you're not going to fit in my organization terribly well if you just don't like to read. That's not what we're about. That's not what we do. And I don't say that as a knock. That's just, you know, that's just the reality of the culture of where I am. So I do, I encourage people. I think reading is extremely important, and I think it's becoming more important as our culture becomes more screen driven. And it just becomes a matter of self-discipline.
Definitely. And going off of that, something I really want to learn about from you is the meaning of confident humility, which is a term you use a lot.
Yeah. So those are two words that often get bandied about and I think are misunderstood. I mean, confidence, everybody feels pretty good about, but I think a lot of people confuse confidence with arrogance. Confidence is not thinking that you're better than other people about stuff. It's just knowing that you're good at it. It's knowing that you have a gift for that. So it sounds really arrogant when people say, or if people ask you a question about, you know, are you good at this thing? Well, if I am good at that thing and I say no, that's not being humble. That's just lying. I mean, if someone were to go to Kobe Bryant at his prime and say, are you a good basketball player? And he goes, well, I mean, I'm okay. Like, Kobe, that's stupid. Now you're just lying to my face. Why would you do, you know? So that's not what that is. For you to know that you're good at something, that's not arrogance. That's just confidence. It's when you have to constantly prove that you're better than everybody else, that's when it becomes arrogance. And I'll be honest, that was a large part of my life as an athlete. And it goes back to that whole trying to prove that I was as good as everyone because I was smaller than them. It's only been in my 30s that I've realized I don't have to prove I'm better than anybody. I know what I'm good at, and as long as I'm doing those things, I don't have to prove that I'm good at it every single time I step on the field. That's not what it's about. So confidence is knowing what you're good at. Humility is also misunderstood. Again, humility is not pretending you're bad at stuff when you're good at it. It's not pretty people pretending they're ugly or smart people pretending that they're dumb. C.S. Lewis in his book Mere Christianity says that humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less often. So humility is really just a kind of self-forgetfulness. So when I talk about confident humility, what I mean there is taking the things that you know you're good at, taking your God-given talents and using them to serve someone other than yourself. That's what confident humility is. It's taking your gifts and using them to serve other people. And when we do that, we make our little corner of the world a little bit better place because I'm not focusing on me, but I am using my gifts to encourage others. And if we can get everybody around our little pocket of the world doing that, we've really made a difference right there. So that's what confident humility is all about. Again, it's about taking what you know you're good at and using those things to serve and encourage other people.
If you don't mind, I'm going to start using that with my players.
Please do. Please do. That's great. I think it's a term that ought to catch on, but, you know.
Yeah. So as you know, on this podcast, we're all about growing from your struggles, developing the underdog mentality that we talked about earlier. What are some of the things you've learned from the setbacks you've faced so far in life?
That's a great question. I've learned a ton. There's two sides of one coin. The first thing that comes to mind is things can always get better, but things also can always get worse. No matter how bad things are, they could be worse. And that's both, it sounds kind of disheartening, but it's also encouraging, because if things could get worse, that means you haven't hit rock bottom yet. It means that there are still things you should be thankful for. I can remember a time about 10 years ago, I'd just gone through my divorce. I was going through bankruptcy. I've been through foreclosure. I lost custody of my kids for a while. And I mean, that was about as low as I could get. My dad had died a few years before. Like it was rock bottom for me. And yet at the same time, there was hope, because I knew that as bad as things were, they weren't going to stay that bad forever. And I'll be honest, I don't know kind of what your listing demographic is, but for me, the reason for that hope comes from my faith. I'm an outspoken Christian. I teach at a small Christian school, and my hope comes from the knowledge that no matter how bad things get here, I know that they will get better either in this life or the next. And so when I was at rock bottom, it wasn't fun, and I was pretty miserable for a while, but I also knew that it would get better. And it was going to take getting some breaks from people. It was going to take getting some help from people. But things are better. I'm remarried. I get my daughters every other week. We have a good relationship with their mom and their stepdad. I'm teaching and I'm coaching and I'm doing things that I love. And life is 180 degrees different than it was years ago. And so one of the big lessons that I've also learned is simply perseverance. Whenever things are awful, keep plugging ahead. You know, keep going, because it can get better. If you just sit down and give up where you are, you're right. It's not ever going to get any better. But as long as you're moving forward, eventually you will get through whatever it is you're dealing with. And again, I don't say that as someone who's never been through difficulties. I say that as someone who has been very grateful to get help in getting through difficulties. You know, if that means you need to go talk with a counselor, go talk with a counselor. If that means that you need to, you know, take some antidepressant medication for a while, okay, do that. Do what's necessary to get through the hard part, because it will get better. And that's, again, that was a lesson that I had to learn by going through a lot of hard things.
And that's awesome advice, even just for people listening who might be going through some tough times right now. So before we wrap this up, do you want to tell people where they can find you and where they can pick your books up?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. Easiest way to find me is my website. It's called reallifeleading.com, reallifeleading.com. And you can, there's a, you know, email Joel tab on there, whatever. You can send me an email. You can also find me on my social media. On Twitter, I'm at Real Life Leading. On Facebook and LinkedIn, you can find me under my name, Joel Hallbaker. And you can find my books on Amazon, or you can find a link to them on my website. And I would love to hear from your audience. I'd love to be of service any way that I can. Again, whether it's just to listen or to encourage or to answer questions, whatever I can do. Again, this is what I do for fun. It's also what I do for a living. And that's a pretty sweet spot for me. So if I can, if I can help anybody, I'm very, very glad to do that.
Well, Joel, thanks so much for coming on the show, sharing your story. It's so awesome that you found like multiple career paths that all align with what you love to do, which is, you know, that's the dream for everyone. So really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. It's been a blast. I love sharing and talking with people. And, I look forward to, like I said, kind of interacting with your audience. I hope that, some of what we've talked about today will prove to be encouraging and inspirational. I appreciate the work that you're doing, trying to encourage other people to overcome whatever struggles they're having. So definitely keep up the good work with what you're doing as well. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you learned something new, smash that subscribe button and leave us a quick review. Hustle and Motivate is presented by JokerMag.com, the home of the underdog.